Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
You are the worst person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen. Never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
We're just on our radio 1 minute after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is the 28th of August, 2012. It's almost over. It's almost a wrap. The August month is gone, therefore the end of summer. Now, I know the unofficial end of summer comes on Labor Day, but, you know, you start looking at the August months and they start to reach around, you know, the 28th. Not 29th to 30th. It's pretty much a wrap. Kids are already back in school. I noticed my neighbors. I didn't hear a bunch of, loud little enchiladas running around and screaming. So I know they're back in school.
Yeah, that's right. I said that.
Yes, I said enchiladas. I did say that. Yes. The Taco Bell patrons are in school. Nonetheless. I'm just doing what I do. It is the first night of the Republican National Convention in Tampa, Florida. But as many of you have been seeing, the attention has not been off of Hurricane Isaac. And Hurricane Isaac is literally the focal point of most people in the media for several reasons. 7 years ago, almost to the day, I believe, in fact, if I'm right about this, it's a couple of days short. Hurricane Katrina hit Louisiana roughly about August 25th back in 2005. I'm almost certain of that. And this is going to be a nothing storm. It's a Category 1 so far. There will be no death and destruction. You will not see Negroes on the top of their homes. You will not see people in wheelchairs dead out on the side of the road. Hurricane Katrina was a Category 3. Ray Nagin was warned 2 days before the storm hit, when he was told that the storm would be coming right at him, that it was picking up steam. He did nothing. He purposely ruined that city. And the news media didn't help in turning that whole catastrophe into something worse as far as media is concerned. Well, that's what liberals do. Now, I watched NBC's Nightly News with Brian Williams. And Lester Holt, house nigga, Lester Holt, was on the news. Now, pay very, very close attention to what I'm telling you here. Don't believe me. Watch a rebroadcast of it. I think they post it online. I think you can go to NBCNews.com and you can watch the report. But Lester Holt and NBC News did something that was so coonish and buffoonerish. And he lost a lot of respect for me today when he did it. But he went out there to interview people, you know, in the storm, people who might be affected by the storm. So the first place he went was talk to a couple of people on the street. And what did he bring up? First person he interviewed is some toothless Negro. Couldn't even understand him. Chicken egg, Katrina. Next person he talks to is another fat Negro. And said, yeah, you know Mother Nature, back in the head, Next interview he's inside some ridiculous shelter that's been put up. Where they're inside the shelter, he's talking to another black woman whose hair ain't did. And what's he talking about? I just hope it ain't as bad as Katrina. I hope it ain't as bad as Katrina. Nigga. All of them interviewed by Lester Holt. And why? Here's why, folks. It's the first day of the Republican National Convention. A group that the liberal media thinks is racist and don't like niggas anyway. So let's feature all of these black people who are displaced. And then contrast that with a bunch of honkies.
Let me finish. Let me come close to the mic. Well, wait. Quick thought.
I need to finish my
maybe
thought.
Maybe if something happens in this hurricane to the black folks, they can blame, they'll blame the Republicans again. Just like they said, Bush created the storm.
Absolutely.
So maybe Mitt Romney created this storm too.
Oh, absolutely. They want to contrast this storm with the Republican National Convention. Look at all the niggas suffering while the honkies party. Ignoring the fact that the president didn't go down there. He's not down there. He don't have no boots on the ground. He's in Iowa talking to kids about keeping them on their parents' insurance for another six years, because if they're 21, they can stay on. I'm sorry, if they're 20, they can stay until they're 26. That's the whole bottom line. So nobody's going to blame Barack Obama for campaigning out in Iowa and going to other states for that matter. That's all they seem to care about, is how can we pin this on the Republicans? Look at honky partying while niggas suffer. That's what I think is going to happen. You're still at work?
Yes.
All right, we'll take the work outside. Thank you, my dear. Anyway. Let me get back to what I was saying before I was rudely interrupted. This is the worst time of our lives as conservatives, as Republicans. This is the worst time. Let me explain to you why this is the worst time for us. It's the worst time for us because right now liberals are on target. They are on message. And their message is to destroy us in every way that they can. And they are here to destroy us by calling us racist, by calling us inhumane, unloving, ungiving, mean-spirited, greedy. That is their intent. Chris Matthews is losing his mind over at MSNBC. You sit around and you even mention that Barack Obama's black. You're racist. Yeah, but he's black, but that's racist. Well, wait. Barack Obama is a black person, but it's racist for you to say it. Because we know he's black, but you're not supposed to say it. It's racist. Can we talk about food stamps? That's racist. Well, why is that racist? Well, it's racist because it's food stamps. Well, what do you mean? I mean, you know black people use food stamps. Like, yeah, but more white people are on food stamps than black people. Yes, I know, but the only people that we know that use food stamps are blacks. We know that there are more whites, but the only people that we know use food stamps in the public eye are blacks. Whites cover it up when they use food stamps. You know, they hand the food stamps underneath the counter. Nobody could see them. Blacks are very, very expressive about their food stamp use. And so you can't bring it up because it's racist. I just told you it's racist because it is. Because I said so. And I'm Chris Matthews. Never dated a nigga. Never been with a nigga. Never slept with a nigga. But I know when niggas is being racist against niggas. That's him. It's Chris Matthews. biggest racist of them all.
And don't think he's not, folks. He's more racist than you recognize. Can't stop talking about race. Can't stop talking about blacks and Latinos. Can't stop it because he only sees them as that. The mere mention of them in any conversation is always deemed as racist because that's all he's got. Because he knows that they're different. And he must point out to everybody else that they are. You can't talk to them about Latinos and blacks or Asians like they're regular people, like they're equal to everyone else. Everyone knows they're different. Don't you know that, honky? They're different. Don't you dare talk about them as equal. Because they're not. Because they're niggas, spicks, and chinks. And you are going to recognize that. And if you talk about them in any other way other than niggas, spicks, and chinks, I'm going to call you on it. No, they cannot be held to the same standard as everybody else. Negroes can't get a job. Spanish people can't stop getting pregnant. Chicks can't drive. And you're going to recognize it no matter what. But, Chris, I just want to treat them as equals and talk about them and their issues as equal Americans. I don't want to recognize them for not getting jobs and having too many babies and not being able to drive. I want to recognize them as regular Americans. Well, you can't do that. You can't. You try to talk to them like they're equals, I will call you on it. And I will call you racist. Now, tell me again how you don't like niggas, spicks, and chicks. Well, Chris, I never ever suggested that in anything that I've ever said. Well, you didn't have to say it. It sounds like it because it's code. I'm sorry, what is code? Well, you said food stamps. But food stamps is code for black? Well, you know it is. Really? I didn't know that. I mean, I thought food stamps were food stamps. No. Anytime you talk about food stamps, it's about blacks. Chris, I really don't know where you're going here. Neither do I, but I like saying it. And that's where he is. This is the sad state that they're in, and this is how desperate they are. Listen to MSNBC right now. Turn to MSNBC. Watch them for a day. Add to their ratings if you must. But listen to the folks at MSNBC today. And nothing that a Republican or conservative could do will ever, ever be deemed as anything more than racist. Everything that they do, rich, whitey, I mean, that's their theme. Their whole theme is rich, whitey. That's the way they're going to view this Republican National Convention. That's the only way that they can see it. Rich, whitey. And they will drum that home. And all you black people out there who are listening to me, because I know you're out there. We've gained quite a following in the black community. All of you who are out there listening to my voice right now, I want you to hear something. If you think that everything everyone says about you is racist, if you believe that everything that's happening in your life is racist, if you really believe that, I want you to really, really think about this. Look at the community that you live in. Look at the neighborhood. Get on a computer and find out who's been running your neighborhoods and your towns. Who's been in charge of the leadership politically in your towns. Find out where they stand politically. Find out their policies. And you tell me whether or not the Republicans are in charge of your poverty, of your crime-ridden streets, your drug-ruled neighborhoods by, you know, gangs and such. You tell me. MSNBC will never, ever mention that. Neither will CNN, neither will the NBC, CBS, or ABC. They'll never mention. The only thing that they want you to know is that you're poor and that's who you're always going to be. You're a permanent underclass in this society. And that is where you'll remain. And the only thing that we have to do in this country is keep getting you a couple of dollars and cents to keep you alive. You know, it's life support, nigga. That's what this is. That's what welfare is. That's what food stamps are. It's life support. Keep them niggas on life support. We'll give them a little more when it's time to vote. But for the rest of the years, keep them niggas on life support. And that's what you are. You're on life support. But you've got to decide, folks. You Negroes have to decide. You want to live or die? You want to stay in a vegetative state? Keep voting these motherfathers in. You want to stay on life support? You want to stay on the government dole giving you pennies just so you can stay alive, so you can keep your little crumb snatchers alive? Or you looking forward to something bigger and better? Did you have high hopes for yourself? Do you want to live out those dreams and those high hopes? Or do you just want to stay on the plantation on life support? Because that's where you are. And I've got no remorse for you if you don't get your ass up and stand up. Just stay poor. Stay living in your drug-ridden streets. Plagued with asthma, asbestos. Poor, hungry baby eating paint chips off the wall. Yeah, nigga, you know. I know. That's right. Baby got asthma eating paint chips off the wall. Don't think I don't know. To be honest with you, and I'm going to probably sound a little harsh here, not that I need to preface this, but I'd rather you just die. Die off quickly. So you stop squeezing the rest of us, busting our asses, trying to make something of ourselves. As we used to say back in the hot 97 days, put a gun in your mouth and end it. You were no good here in the first place, especially if you didn't have a dream, a hope, or a desire, and you're just waiting for somebody else to pay for you. Get it over with. Here's a little hip-hop for you Negroes. Holler back, youngin'.
Y'all back in chains. And when he gets called out for it, we Republicans get accused of taking what he said out of context. It's always us taking y'all out of context. It's always you're so misunderstood. And y'all are getting more indignant by the day as we Republicans expose you for how cynical, hateful, greedy, covetous, racist, and just straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy you Democrats actually are.
I think what's happening.
Propaganda.
Glaring examples I like to point to about how Democrats are always making excuses is Bill Clinton at Robert Byrd's memorial. Bill Clinton tries to make light of Democrat Senator Robert Byrd being in the KKK and tries to sell us on overlooking the racist position he ran on by saying, give him a break. He was just trying to get elected. You're exactly right, Bill. That was key for Democrats. And a big reason why they got elected was because they were trusted to represent the racist sentiments of their constituency. This is at the core of the Democrat Party. People didn't vote for Republicans for this. They voted Democrat. But the Republican Party is the party of racists. Based on what? Barry Goldwater? Lee Atwater? Strom Thurmond? Did I miss anybody? I'm sure you liberals got a few cherry-picked figures for your talking points. But while you try to recite these names, keep in mind the words of your Democrat darling, Bill Clinton. Robert Byrd was just trying to get elected. That's pretty much the way it was for Democrats. Period. The hotbeds of bigotry in America are commonly recognized as the southern states, right? And keep in mind, the people are going to vote for those who represent their racist values. And we've already agreed that the southern states have been the hottest for bigotry, right? Well, that list of so-called racist Republicans that liberals try to bring up is as insignificant as the last sheet of tissue on a toilet paper roll after Michael Moore binges on buffalo wings. Let's look at these racist states, shall we? Texas. Oh yeah, whole lot of racist rednecks down there. And of course, they're going to want people in office who represent their white supremacist culture, right? That's why out of 47 governors, 38 of them have been Democrats and only 7 have been Republican. Oh, but years of Democrat racist representation is nothing compared to the strategies of Bush Sr.'s campaign manager Lee Atwater. But hold on, that's just one of those ultra-racist states. Alabama had 53 governors, 42 have been Democrats. Only 6 chosen by the people of that state were Republican. But you want to hold Republicans responsible for racism? Okay. The racist Democrat representation continues with Mississippi. Ooh-wee, that's a barroom hoedown of bigotry right there. They've had 64 governors in that state. 52 have been Democrats, and only 6 have been Republicans. Yeah, but Strom Thurmond, shut up. What about Democrat segregationist Lester Maddox? And for every so-called racist Republican you liberals try to point to, there's like 10 Democrat actual racists. But y'all still really want to believe that racism is the fault of Republicans that badly, huh? Despite these figures? Okay, let's continue. And I'm not even talking about congressmen and senators and mayors and such. That would take too long. But yes, the majority of them were Democrats too. Georgia has had 82 governors. 47 were Democrats. Only 4 were Republicans. Louisiana, a lot of racism there. 53 governors. 30 were Democrats. 11 have been Republicans. Arkansas, 45 governors, 8 Republicans, the rest were Democrats. Tennessee, 58 governors, 10 Republicans, 34 of them were Democrats. South Carolina, 116 governors, 8 of them Republicans, 90 of them were Democrats. Do I really need to go through all these states where racism was the hottest? I thought you were Democrats. Isn't it the majority rules in your party? Well, the majority of your party's history is racist, yet because of minority instances of arguable racism in the Republican Party, the minority ruling is that the Republicans are racist? See how contradictory y'all are? Are you understanding that the racist population of these states that are commonly known as the most racist states of the United States elected people who represented their racist values, and the people representing their racist values were Democrats? You can't lay the blame on Republicans when it was Democrats controlling these states. The Democrat Party platform is rooted in racism. Have you ever read the original Democrat Party platform? The original included language to protect their so-called right to force people into slavery. But Republicans are the racists because the original Republican Party platform was to abolish slavery? And when liberals are reminded of this, they always say the same thing. Yeah, well, you know what, Zoe? That was a long time ago, and you need to get over it. Really? Okay, well, you know what? Slavery itself was a long time ago. Why don't y'all get over that? Marinate on that a bit while we pick this up on the next donation. Straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy.
On the radio, 24 minutes after the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com. I'd like to acknowledge an old comrade back in the Boston days who I connected with today, Jay Severin, who was formerly of Boston Talk 1200. They just revamped that whole thing over there in Boston. I'm really, really upset at that. I love Jay Severin's show. I would listen to it on iHeartRadio. after Rush Limbaugh at 3 o'clock. It's a good show, and he's a good guy. He was one of the first guys who called me up when I was in Boston. I was at WRKO. He was at TKK, which was our talk rival. And I'm sitting in the office in WRKO, and I get this phone call and picks it up. I pick it up, and Jay says, "Hi, Reese Hopkins." I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Jay Severin, WTKK." The first thing that went through my mind is why is a guy from my rival station calling me? And Severin says, "Man, I just want to tell you, I've been listening to your show." And I was like, "Oh, wow, really?" And I already knew who Jay Severin was. I knew his reputation. And I did all my research of people who I was going to be up against in the station and all that stuff and who were the big wigs, who were the heavy hitters. Jay Severin was definitely on that list. And so I tell him, I said, why are you calling? And he wants to introduce me to his agent. And he starts, breaking down his agent's credentials. And his agent turns out to be the agent for a famed screenwriter and playwright. Oh, and I had his name at the top of my head. Why am I forgetting it? He and his daughter co-wrote The Unit. Somebody's going to tell me who it is. Why am I forgetting this playwright's name now? Oh, why am I forgetting his name now? And I had her at the tip of my tongue a second ago, and I completely forgot. I'm killing a brain cell right now. But it'll come to me. But anyway... he was introducing me to, or at least telling me, he said, you should get this guy as an agent and whatnot. But I wasn't in Boston long enough to at least do it. But I always respected Jay Severin. He's always supported me even after, my arrest, and all of the allegations. He still stood by me. So it was nice to hear from him today. So, Jay, I just want to acknowledge you and say, man, I'm sorry to hear about Boston Talk 1200. But don't worry about it, man. You're a good guy, and you're a big deal. So you'll be back beyond a shadow of a doubt. So I want to definitely acknowledge him. He's out there fighting a good fight, too. He's a badass as far as I'm concerned. Okay, so Republican National Convention going on, taking place tonight. Ann Omni is going to speak. Now, look, I don't care what anybody says. Ann Romney is not the speech that we are looking forward to. As much as everyone thinks that it is, that she is going to dress down or make Mitt Romney more personable, that's bull. That's not what I'm looking for tonight, folks. I'm looking for one guy tonight, and I'm sure you know who it is. And that is my man, Chris Christie. I'm looking forward to Chris Christie. Now, there's a reason why. It's not just because he's from New Jersey and all that other crap. Nah. It's not just because this guy is a loudmouth. Nah. It ain't because of that. It's because this guy I know is going to get on that podium and straight talk. There are going to be people out there who are going to be scrutinizing every word that comes out of his mouth, especially folks like MSNBC. Correspondents. CNN and ABC, they're waiting for what he's going to say. They're wondering whether or not he's going to flat out call Barack Obama a darkie. They're waiting for it. They're hoping Chris Christie brings something up about a birth certificate. They're hoping they bring something up about his skin color. They're hoping that it bring out something about him being a socialist or a communist. They're hoping that he says something off the cuff. They're desperate to hear that. Because then they could just rip the entire Republican National Committee. They can rip them apart. You let this guy on the stage? We told you you were racist. We've always said it. That's all. But I know Chris Christie. And I know what he's going to do. He's going to reach that line. Don't get me wrong, folks. He's going to approach the line. He might even attempt to put his toe over it. If he goes off teleprompter, he'll tempt it. He'll go a little over the line. He'll just poke his toe over the line just to get people interested.
just to let them know. He'll say something like, you know, Barack Obama, that narcissistic mother father. He'll say it. That's all I want to hear. And they'll be screaming, was he tempting to call the President Obama the N-word? He is going to do it. And that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to Chris Christie. He is going to be amazing tonight. And I have to say this, and all due respect to this fine, beautiful white woman, Ann Romney. You know, some young guys are lucky to have a fine white woman like that at her age. That's a beautiful white woman right there. Come on, tell the truth. Okay? Tell the truth. That is a beautiful white woman. A damn woman bakes, for crying out loud. She bakes. There ain't enough white women out there that bake anymore. These cosmopolitan broads. They ain't baking no more. This woman still bakes. Makes pancakes and waffles, damn it. Gets pregnant whatever her man tells her to do. Get on the bed. Make us a baby. Got five boys, for crying out loud. And stayed home and took care of them. How is this bad? All you independent women out there talking about, I would work for mine. I don't need no man. Every guy wants an Ann Romney. I'm going to get me one. I'm just teasing.
I'm sorry. Well,
it was a joke.
I'm sorry. Come again, Negro?
It was a joke. Relax.
I'm sorry. What am I doing right now?
My apologies. What are you doing right now? Tell
I am cooking dinner.
For whom?
For you.
That's right.
Cooking for my husband.
Cook my dinner.
I am. And I will gladly cook it. That's because right. I am an old-fashioned type of broad.
That's right.
And what am I doing? Cooking dinner after I got home from work.
That's right.
All day.
That's right.
Still taking work phone calls on the IT helpline.
That's right. All right. All right. Now hurry up. Go make me chicken pot pie. Okay.
I'm making your ass some swine.
I freaking love it. So every guy wants him in the Ann Romney. You're all jealous now. Tell the truth. You're all jealous now. I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Show your hatred. Show your jealousy. That doesn't matter to me. That's the truth. You have to deal with it. But I don't mind. In fact, she even brought me over a little some appetizers before dinner. Some cheese and pepperoni, which I'm enjoying right now. You see that? That's what Mitt Romney did. He went out there and he conquered the world, made his wife a crap of money, crap load of money. She said, don't worry, Mitt. I'm going to sit in the house and I'm going to make you some babies. I'm going to cook you dinner and bake you a cake. Now go out there and take over another company.
Go out there and make somebody else get cancer. Give them the gift that keeps on giving.
So that's who Ann Romney is. Now, I'll be honest with you. I don't think her speech is going to be all that good. I think her speech is going to be boring. I don't think it's going to be that great. I know they want it to be great, but I don't think so. I think that speech is not going to help them because they don't want it to help him. It'll be criticized. It'll be scrutinized. They'll say it was lackluster. She's never read off a teleprompter before. She's got personality, but she's not going to be able to expound on that personality through a teleprompter. That's just not her. So I think her whole speech is going to be boring, although it is the feature. But I think it's going to be boring.
The feature?
Yeah, she's the featured speaker tonight, and then Chris Christie's after her.
Chris Christie should be the feature.
The feature?
Yeah. Oh.
Of course he should be the feature, but he's coming on after her, which I think is great. You can't have Chris Christie go first and then Ann Romney go afterwards if she sucks. You got to have Chris Christie come out there and tear it down. All right? You bring out there, you bring her out and say, this is my husband. He's a good guy. I love him. I had all of his babies. If I could, I'd have more. And then she talks about how much she loves him, how much she cares about him, how great he is as an individual, how he raised their boys and taught them to be men. Raised them to find good women. All blonde. No, I'm kidding. To find good women.
What'd you say?
All blonde.
Oh, but you don't even like blonde chicks.
My own little story about that. But anyway.
What?
Nothing. My point was. My point was that she's going to go out there and she's going to say what it is I expected her to say. As a wife, Mitt Romney has got to go out there and do what it is he's got to do. That's the only person who's going to be able to prove who he is. It's him. I don't need my wife going out there to talk for me and make me personable to the rest of the country. I do that. I think Mitt Romney's got an ability to do that. I just think he needs to be let off the chains, if you will, by his campaign. I think they've been a little restrictive. He's going to go out there and do what he does. As being a charismatic businessman, that's what you have to do. Go out there like you're giving a presentation in a boardroom. You want somebody to buy a product? You want somebody to jump in on a venture? Whatever it is, go out there and sell the product. And you go out there and you woo him. You tell him, I'm the man to do the job because this guy is a fool and a loser. He's never run anything, couldn't run anything. This guy would burn down a cookie stand. So you got to go out there and make that yourself. But Chris Christie, that's the guy who we're going to be watching tonight. And we're going to get some excerpts and we're going to play that tomorrow. You know we are. Prime time, damn it. You cannot miss the Chris Christie speech. You go out there and you try to, if you want to. But Chris Christie's going to make the case for the President of the United States and let this president know he is on notice. He better watch out.
Barack Obama knows his dumb ass is on notice.
Yeah, I know. Chris Christie should walk out there with this music right now.
Is Bob. Bob is a normal guy. He has a good job. He works hard to provide for his family. And he tries to keep himself informed on current events. There's just one problem.
I don't think President Obama is doing a very good job.
Bob is a racist. There's nothing worse than having a racist around saying hateful things.
I don't think it's unreasonable for people to have to show ID when they go vote.
Whoa, Bob. Slow down with the bigotry for just a minute. People like Bob are still very upset that there's a black man in the White House. As a result, they oppose President Obama's policies. Not because they're bad policies, but because they just don't like black people. How could anyone oppose such great policies? They're awesome and are working super well.
But how do I talk about my political beliefs without being a racist?
Let's give Bob a few pointers on how not to be racist.
Did you know that under President Obama, more people are on food stamps than ever before?
Bob. That's racist. Just because something is true doesn't mean that it's not bigoted.
but how can something be racist if it's true?
That's a racist question.
We need to secure our southern border to stem the tide of illegal immigration.
Racist! Calling undocumented workers illegal simply because they're here illegally is proof that you hate Mexicans.
My adopted son is Mexican.
Doesn't matter, still racist.
I see.
I like Barack Obama. He's a light-skinned African-American with no Negro dialect.
Now that's racist.
Nope, not so fast there, Bob. It's only racist if it's said by someone who doesn't support President Obama and his policies. Susie is a Democrat, so it's okay if she says it.
That doesn't make any sense.
Sure it does. A liberal can't be racist. It's not possible because liberals support the things that are good for the black community.
So a conservative and a liberal can say exactly the same thing, but only the conservative is racist for saying it.
Now you're getting it, Bobby. For example, when a conservative politician says something that's not directly racist, but is construed that way by liberals, he loses his job, like Majority Leader Trent Lott. But when a Democrat in the same position turns out to be a former Klansman, like Majority Leader Robert Byrd, he's a liberal hero!
It's all starting to make sense now, so I can say all sorts of racist stuff as long as I vote for the right people.
Right! So if Susie says,
I am so proud of myself for voting in the first African-American president in 2008.
Her statement has no racial implications whatsoever. But if someone says,
I voted for Barack Obama last time, but I'm thinking about voting for Mitt Romney this year.
That person is totally racist.
Hold on a second. How can someone who voted for Barack Obama the first time be racist just because they don't vote for him this time? They obviously didn't care about his skin color before.
Sometimes people don't realize that they're racist until later.
How can someone become racist in 4 years?
That's a clown question, bro.
I'm so confused. I don't want to see the country go down the toilet, but I also don't want the people at work to think I'm a racist.
Well, remember, Bob, if the country is ruined, you can always blame it on George W. Bush.
You're right. I'm going to vote for Barack Obama because I'm not a racist.
Way to go, Bobby. Remember, racism in the workplace is never cool.
I'm Barack Obama, and I've never seen this ad. Didn't even know it existed.
Hey, homie.
Look what I got.
Just for you, bro. Fist bump. But the GOP is going to put you all back in chains.
We're on the radio and we're back 43 minutes after the hour. Just a good, 17 minutes to the top of the hour. Plenty of stories going on in the news, of course, about the RNC, Hurricane Isaac. It's about to touch ground. Look, I don't want anything bad to happen as far as Hurricane Isaac is concerned. But, you know, what I do love about hurricane season is that it really, really does cause people to get out of the house and get some fresh air. I will tell you that. And that I'm really excited about. I'd like to see that.
But in other news,
there is an anti-Obama ad that's running, and I'm going to get it up, in fact, at the top of the hour. And this ad is doing what it is that I've been suggesting people do for a long time. You call President Barack Obama out on his radical policies. You pretty much just let everybody know how radical he is. The only way to do that is to follow the man's record. And it's an abortion ad against Barack Obama, which is even more alarming. And it's by the Susan B. Anthony Organization.
And it is such a scathing ad, just watching it. The woman in the ad will amaze you because of what she's endured. And I think it's just one of those ads. Look, liberals like to use these personal stories. And these personal stories always involve somebody's kid, somebody's child. You know,
this is Timmy. And Timmy lost his arm because there was no Obamacare.
You know, that kind of stuff. They love doing that. And it pulls at your heartstrings. I don't want Timmy to lose his arm. What if another Timmy loses his arm if we don't pass Obamacare? And there are idiots out there who do that. Trust me, I know a few. Trust me, I know a few. But anyway, nonetheless, some people are just morons, and that's just what it is that they do. But this story is my favorite of the day. A school teacher in Atlanta was helping her students cheat because she says, quote, they are as dumb as hell. Now, this woman is a former fifth grade teacher, and she's implicated in a cheating scandal. She reportedly gave her students illegal assistance and was caught in a conversation with another teacher saying that she had to help them because your kids is dumb as hell. That's what she said. Your kids is dumb as hell. Now, look, I'm a big fan of the Don Nicolione show, but she got some sorry-ass niggas on her show. And that's a fact. I don't give a crap. Whoever heard me say it, run back and report it. I don't care. Ain't nobody over there going to challenge me anyway.
They ain't got enough damn sense to challenge.
Yeah, I know that. But see, they didn't want to admit to these kinds of stories. Sadly enough, folks, and I'm going to let you know this, there is a plethora of fool-ass Negroes in the business who are as stupid as hell and won't report this story because they're afraid of the truth. See, I don't know. Now, you listen to Steve Harvey in the morning. I have no idea why.
I really stopped listening, but go ahead.
Does he talk about this story?
About what story?
This story about the Atlanta teacher that was helping those kids cheat.
No, I didn't listen to him this morning.
Okay.
So I'll...
I don't know whether or not he's covering stories like this, but it's rare that they do.
They don't cover anything that's relevant. They do, you know, their letter.
Strawberry letter?
Strawberry letter.
Yeah. JC, get on the microphone, because I know this is your arena. You follow Steve Harvey sometimes. I know you do. Let me see if JC is there. JC, are you there? Hello? Okay, maybe not. All right, well, let's see if JC's on there in a little bit. But the bottom line is that they don't cover relevant stories like this, and it drives me up the wall that they don't cover stories like this. Here is a teacher telling everyone, telling someone that the black kids in the class are dumb as hell. So what does she do about it? Instead of teaching them, she helps them cheat, which, again, is just baffling. Now, Mike in Florida, our resident racist. I'm sorry, man. I love that term. It's on the phone. I think you tweeted this story, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I think so. But this is not the first time that happened in Atlanta. That happened a couple of years ago where an entire school got caught giving kids the answers on standardized tests.
Exactly.
Atlanta is the same place where they're teaching third graders how to math, telling them to count how many beatings Frederick Douglass's ass got back in slavery and how many oranges did the slaves pick off the trees.
Well, you know, the state puts these standardized tests into place, and they tell the schools that your funding is dependent on what percentage of your students do a certain amount, right? Do a certain level. So, you know, case in point where I live, this little county I live in is always in, like, the top five of counties in the state of Florida for the standardized test. Always. We're not a wealthy county. We're not a particularly urban or sophisticated county. But, and it's going to sound bad, our county is, like, 92% white. So we need to do better on the standardized test. But the counties and areas that are majority-minority always do poorly. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's, these kids had come from non-nuclear families or they don't want to learn or maybe they're just stupid. But, you know, if you're some teacher who gets stuck teaching in one of these school districts and your job is dependent on making these stupid little Negroes pass these tests, maybe after a few years you just say, well, screw it. They're too stupid to learn and I'll cheat for them.
Yeah, but you know what? This is the problem that's going on in these schools. Let me tell you why black kids fail at these schools. And this is going to be hard for a lot of Negroes to hear, but let me tell you why. What I realized in being in a household with children and being with school-aged children in a household is that it is very important for the parent to be somewhat educated, to have some sort of school life experience that they can embark on or associate with their kids. I'll give you a perfect example. I remember being in a diner with my stepdaughter, having an argument about cliques in school. Now, she was completely defiant. It was before she got into high school. It's just about graduation time. It's over the summer. And we're having a conversation about cliques. And I say to her, look, I know you're going to high school. You're going to a great school. Just beware of cliques. Just, you know, be very, very cognizant of cliques because they're happening. You'll have this group and that group and this group and that group, and there'll be this type of people and that type of people. She looks at me straight in the face, square in the face, and says, look, that may have happened when you went to school, but school's different now. I looked at her again, and I said, listen to me. You don't know what you're talking about. I understand that you think that I'm from, you know, ancient days and when dinosaurs roamed the earth, but I'm telling you, this is going to happen. I'll never forget, maybe a year into the year, she comes into school, she comes home from school, and I think we're driving to her brother's practice, soccer practice. And she tells me the story about her three girlfriends. It's like, oh, my three girlfriends, they all, you know, we all pretend like we're, you know, we're from Sex and the City and each and every one of us have a name. And she goes, which one do you think I am, Dad? I looked there and I said, you're Miranda. How did you know that? I said, you just seem like that would be you. So, as she's laughing about the fact that I figured it out, I said, oh, so there's a group of people that you hang out with and you girls all pretend to be Sex and the City members. That's not a clique? And she looks at me and she, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess, it never changes. Having those experiences with your kids and being able to talk about things like that and recognizing what high school life is like and what junior high school life is like and having those experiences and exchanging those ideas with your kids is exactly what creates a better student or a better kid in school. Unfortunately, and I went a long way around this, but let me get to my point. For niggas, never happens because they don't want to talk about school. And when they talk about school, they don't talk about it in a favorable way. When they talk about school, it's always a pejorative. I ain't learned ish in school. My teacher ain't taught me nothing. The teachers were liars. The teachers ain't wanted, always failed me. Teachers never liked me. Teachers always a pejorative. You pass that on to your kids. Kids have nothing to reflect on a good, decent school experience. The only thing they know is, look, I didn't like school, but you got to go and learn something. Well, Mom, what did you learn? Well, I ain't learned shit. They ain't teach me nothing in them schools. Them schools, they don't learn. What do you think you're going to pass on to your child when he goes to school? This is all a joke. This is all planned. This is the white man's thing. Education ain't.
And God forbid some black kid actually sounds like you when you speak. How much you just want to be white nonsense do you have to put up with? How many ass pickings do you take?
I always hearken back to that CNN report. See, when Soledad O'Brien hosted that CNN show called Black in America, and they did this whole series about different aspects of Black in America, and they had that reporter from Newsweek who went to a white school. We talked to one of the kids who was an average student and asked him, who are the most popular kids in school? The kid points out the popular kids in the white school. They went and found out these kids' grade point averages. They were all A's and B's. They went to a black school, kid the same age, about 12 years old, asked him, who's 14 years old. Who's the most popular kids in school? He points out the most popular kid in school. They're all C and D students. When they asked the black kid about it, about what is with those kids being C and D students, why aren't the kids who have A's and B's more popular? Now, you don't want to be those kids. Those kids are nerds. You don't want to be those kids. Those kids aren't popular around here. Because education is foreign to these Negroes.
See, and people complain that kids in the inner city or kids in black school districts get a substandard education and teachers don't try. But to be fair, how many years would it take for you as a teacher stuck in that situation before you just said, well, screw it?
Absolutely. Hey, look.
A doctor when all your patients refuse to lose weight and keep smoking. After a while, you just say, well, screw it. Okay.
More than likely. Edward in Connecticut is with us. Hello, Edward.
Hey, what's up, Reese? Hey, I got to say, I do have to disagree with you about you thinking that, children need their parents to have some type of educational background for them to have the respect to have a good education. Because I know you know who Thomas Sowell is.
Oh, Thomas Sowell?
Yeah.
Sure.
In one of the books I read, he did a study on three high schools in the Washington, D.C. area, three majority white and one majority black. And the black kids did they scored higher on standardized tests. This was I think it was back from 1870 to 1955. Mm-hmm. And also, the majority of the occupations of the children's parents that were in those schools, they were all like laborers or janitors and stuff like that. So, those people, especially back then, did not have much of an education, the parents rather, and they were able to inspire their kids, to, go to school, do what you have to do, and do well on these tests.
Well, then fine. Then allow me to retort then. Okay, if you're talking about that particular study, remember, we're talking about a time where it was relevant. In fact, if not the most important thing, there was a different ideal within the black community during that time. The idea was to achieve through education. Most black people during the 1800s and the early 1900s always stood fast on the idea that in order to make it out of your current situation was to be educated. Be able to read. That's your first step. Be able to go to school. Second step. Get a college education, so you can stand with all of the rest of these people, because education was the thing that was the most bogged down against, poor blacks, ex-slaves, former slaves, whatever it was. Education was keeping them from ever advancing in their lives.
Oh, sure. Definitely.
But today, nothing is stopping them because there's a faction out there that suggests that, listen to what the guy said during the Black Panther Party show on Friday. All of them kept repeating the same mantra. You sound like a white guy. You sound like a white guy. You sound like a white guy. That's all they could say. It wasn't about defending or retorting anything that I had to say on policy or ideals. It was, you sound white, therefore you're discredited. And what does that mean when it comes to people like that? It means that if you don't sound authentically black, then you're discredited. You mean nothing to black people. Oh, you educated? Well, that makes you nothing as far as black people are concerned, because we like all niggas ignorant.
And that's a really new phenomenon, because if you just look at entertainers, go back to the 50s and go watch an interview with Nat King Cole.
Oh, yeah.
Or Chuck Berry. Even Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry doesn't sound like an ignorant cotton picker. I mean, he may be a freak who likes to watch women pee. you know. but he's not an ignorant cotton picker. But you listen to an interview with a celebrity now, even a major black celebrity except Denzel Washington, they all try to put some stank on the way they talk, and they try to drop their R's. And you know, it's sad. I don't
this whole rejection of education is a pretty new phenomenon in the black American community.
Well, I would always tell anyone, do you guys, now I know you've seen these videos, and when I saw it, and for some odd reason, I don't know what it was that day that made me view it, but something just made me, as a investigative reporter, something made me do it. So one day I'm sitting at home, and I'm watching online Dick Gregory talking about Republicans and Democrats and Barack Obama, whatever it was. He's on a stage. Tavis Smiley is the moderator of this big, giant thing going on at this arena, whatever it was. It wasn't even an arena. It was a stage of some sort. But I want to say it was the Black Correspondents' Dinner of some sort, and it had black journalists or whatever it was. So Dick Gregory's there talking about his grandson. And he's telling this story about his grandson and how his grandson is living, you know, says that he lives in this house and all of his brothers are laughing at him. And he said, you know, that's your house, but don't make that your address. I'm listening to Dick Gregory say this whole speech as he's rambling on about this story. The thing that caught me was I said to myself, wow, you know, Dick Gregory has changed over the years. And I went onto YouTube and I said, let me see Dick Gregory on the Ed Sullivan Show. And I did. Found some stuff with Dick Gregory. Dick Gregory doesn't sound like that guy who was on that stage with Tavis Smiley. I said, when did he become that guy? Dick Gregory is a well-spoken comedian. He's the Bill Cosby of his era. You know, if you will, and that's not to take anything from Bill Cosby, but he was a well-spoken black comedian who was very, very intelligent. But now he's on the stage with a whole bunch of blacks doing a, don't you make that your address. And I'm sitting there going, what happened? Is this the way that we have to communicate with blacks in order for them to identify?
There was a stupid movie that came out a few years ago called Stealth with Jessica Biel and Jamie Foxx.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so it's a movie about elite test pilots in, I believe it was the Navy. So you have Josh Charles, who's believable as a test pilot. Jessica Biel, not so much, mainly because she was like 23 years old. But then you have Jamie Foxx. And instead of playing it straight and, you know, Tom Cruise-ish, Val Kilmer-ish, Jamie Foxx plays it like he's some ignorant coon from the ghetto. And he's a test pilot. Can't you give black kids one, I don't know, articulate, admirable character in the movie? He's got to be talking slang and saying, yeah, we're going to get your ass. Come on, man. It's insulting.
But you know what? This is what they call authentic today. That's the disgusting part. This is what's authentic today.
I was in the Air Force. I've met pilots. Pilots aren't like that. You can't be a pilot and be like that. Fighter pilots are all like math nerd high school quarterbacks.
Right. and you know what? They're proud of it, too.
Yeah, I mean, you can't be stupid and be a jet pilot. You have to be basically a genius.
Yeah, but you know what? I think the idea was to have Jamie Foxx play one of these black guys that broke through the ceiling, so to speak, keeping it real, as they say.
Yeah,
you know?
They don't exist.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's not real.
Yeah, that's the saddest part of them all. All right, guys, I'm going to go to the top of the hour. When we come back, I'm going to try to get this ad up for this Barack Obama, this anti-Obama ad, which is really an amazing piece. I'm really excited to play it. I'm just hoping that my computer will cooperate. But we'll be back shortly. Stick around. It's Reset Radio. We'll be right back.
vice president said, and he's going to put you all in chains. Was he talking about slavery? You bet your ass he was. Was he using a vernacular? Yes, he was. Did he think it was cute because there were many in the audience? Yes, he did. Was it something stupid to say? You bet your life it was stupid. And it is something that if a black had said it, we would have been laughing because we would know that damn hell, they may be beating the hell out of us, but they ain't thinking about putting us in any chains.
Resident Kool-Aid Man is back on the air with us. We'll put him on in a second. Thank you, Mr. Montgomery, for joining us. Okay, this is the ad I want you to hear. If you haven't seen it, haven't heard it already, this is what it was that I was talking about. This is the kind of ad that would inspire me. This is the reason why I did the ad talking about Barack Obama dividing the country. This is the ad that should have been made. It's a conservative Susan B. Anthony list. They posted poised to embark on a TV ad campaign challenging Barack Obama's record on abortion. An official with the group tells Politico they've spent about $150,000 to get an ad buy in Missouri, and it shows a woman by the name of Melissa Oden, I think that's the pronunciation of her name, O-H-D-E-N, speaking on the camera about this very sensitive subject of abortion. You got to hear it yourself.
I'm going to tell you something you might not know. Many children, more than you might think, actually survive failed abortions and are born alive. I know because I'm one of them.
Oh, I don't know why I just paused. Okay.
I'm one of them. I was aborted and my body discarded like I didn't exist, but a nurse heard me crying and cared enough to save my life. There's something else you may not know. When he was in the Illinois State Senate, Barack Obama voted to deny basic constitutional protections for babies born alive from an abortion. Not once, but four times. I know it's by the grace of God I'm alive today. If only to ask America this question. Is this the kind of leadership that will move us forward? That would discard the weakest among us? How will you answer?
Susan B. Anthony List is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And of course, you can go to their website, which is sba-list.org. Now, Mary, do you think that's a compelling ad? I mean, she pretty much just said she survived an abortion. The only reason why she survived is because the nurse heard her crying in a trash can.
It's pretty compelling.
I mean, for crying out loud. And she says that President Obama, which, by the way, he did.
Wait. If it was an abortion, how was she in a trash
can? Aha. That's because, again, this is, you got to look this up. There's a huge story. In fact, I'm almost certain. I'm totally going to throw this one right over the mic. Mike knows this story better than I do because I hear it often and I try to ignore it because it's such a grotesque story. Mike, you remember this story in Illinois. This woman testified in front of the Senate about a baby who was aborted who survived and she watched it die for the last 45 minutes of its life. Do you remember this?
I hate to say no, but no.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to go to Dennis, because I think Dennis probably... Dennis, you got to know this story, right, Dennis?
Yeah.
Okay, what was the
I had other name? Questions for you, but we'll go on your theme now.
Okay, no, that's right. Do you remember the woman's name who testified? She was the nurse that
I don't remember her name, but I do remember.
Okay, now this was because President Barack Obama, while he was senator at the time, had voted to, no matter what, if the child survived the abortion, that the child still had to die.
What?
That's right. Late-term abortion.
Late-term.
And post-abortion.
Right. Late-term abortion and survival of abortion. He voted. Now, that's what she's saying in the ad.
I want you to pay attention.
And I remember his voting record as a state senator. And as a U.S. senator, he was for post-life abortions.
That's right.
Under no circumstances was life ever to be in the mix.
That's right. No matter what, if the baby survived an abortion, he voted under no circumstances are you allow that baby to survive. And that's what this woman's ad is about, or the Susan B. Anthony list ad is about. I'm going to play it one more time because I want you to hear this, Mary. It's a very compelling piece just because of the subject matter in and of itself. And, of course, it's not going to play because that's exactly how this works. So typical. That's just me. It's just me. But anyway, the woman's name is Melissa Odin, and she's speaking on the camera, and she says, many children, more than you think, actually survive failed abortions and are born alive. I know this because I'm one of them. She says, when he was in the Illinois State Senate, Barack Obama voted to deny basic constitutional protections for babies born alive from an abortion. Not once, but four times.
Hold up. I'm sorry. Come again?
Okay. He voted for it four times. He was in there for, again, he voted
so
for it four
times. So he's
saying
if you go and you get a late-term abortion, if you're 7 months pregnant.
Well, no. If you get an abortion, period, and the baby survives, outside of the womb, it's still not considered a life because the woman came there to get an abortion anyway. So
so you kill it?
Yes. You have to kill it even if the baby survives.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
It
does. Crush the skull.
Let's bring the rest of the guys in here, too. I'm sorry about that, guys. I didn't mean to keep you on hold there for too long. But you get the point. It's like he voted. It's not a late-term abortion. It's a survived abortion. The baby. Now, remember, they're saying that the baby doesn't have any rights because it's inside of the womb, and therefore it's the right of
but
the mother.
But now it's out of the
womb. Right, and it is a living and breathing thing now, an actual life person. Right, an actual life.
It was a living and breathing person before your ass decided to go get an abortion because it lives and breathes inside an amniotic-filled fluid.
They don't care about that. They don't care about that.
It's living and breathing through you.
It's a right to kill as long as it's inside the woman's body. Go ahead, Dennis.
Are you aware of a nurse was disciplined by her hospital because she saved the life of an infant who survived an abortion and put the baby on life support and disciplined because under the rules she was supposed to leave the child in the gurney and let it die? That was a few years ago, too. That's what we've come to in this throwaway society.
Yeah, exactly what it is. You're absolutely right. It's a throwaway society. It's the biggest issue today. But here's a woman. This is why I'm proud of the ad, because it calls attention to that exact thing. Look, if you want to talk about abortion, you know, everybody wants to talk about, quote-unquote, the war on women, if you will. This woman is the perfect person to have out there doing this ad. Now, the question has to be to the President of the United States. Yeah, did you really vote four times to kill a live baby?
Well, first of all, did anybody take human anatomy and physiology in maybe their last year of high school or their first year of college?
It means nothing. Not the liberals.
People don't care anymore.
It doesn't. They never, ever care. Remember, this is not...
And does anybody comprehend that the largest gift that you could ever get as a woman, the largest gift you could ever get, is the opportunity to even have the ability to get pregnant and then to carry a child and create a life inside of your own body. I can't say that my beliefs should speak for everyone else. If you're raped or incest or something like that, I think that should still be the woman's choice because it just should. In my opinion, it should be the woman's choice.
I'm sorry. I know.
Let me ask you this, if I might.
You cannot use abortion as birth control, and that's what Planned Parenthood does.
Go ahead, Dennis. Right. What was your question?
All right. I heard on another station, we won't say which Justin was.
I don't care about that. Come on. I don't do that. Who was it? Seriously.
I just said it was Justin's show.
Oh, Justin's show. Okay.
And he made a big deal about Paul Ryan last week. Who said that women should have ultrasound before the abortion. I try to make them understand that maybe that the child could be saved once the woman sees that she has a living child inside her, and he couldn't understand it. Maybe you'll make some headway.
Well, no, I think, remember, his culture has made a logical connection with abortion. They have. They've expanded this idea that you might be saving a child's life by killing it, if you get my meaning. It's like the kid doesn't have to be here and suffer like the rest of us do. You know, it's a victimization thing. It's like, you know what, if that woman has that child may suffer.
Give that child up for abortion, because there's many a women.
You mean adoption.
Adoption, I'm sorry, for abortion. I'm sorry, for adoption. There's many a women out here and many a men that are married to women. The women can have babies, but the men's sperm is no good. So, and vice versa. Or they can't have babies, whatever. Give them up for adoption. There's plenty of people out here that'll take those babies.
Well, I'm going to ask you something, Reese, which is very provocative.
Go ahead.
When did you stop being a nigger?
Reese was never, ever. From the time.
You know what I'm getting at? I'm talking about the niggerization of America, that every black has to be in the friggin' jungle and carry a spear to go after the white man. You don't have black models like regular normal people, you and I, that just trying to struggle in this damn world. But with the liberal media, if you are off the jungle and going around to kill whitey, that should be the normal. If you're an educated man, something's wrong with you. And I resent that. I resent the terrible splitting of this nation to say that if you are a man who goes to church and takes care of your family and just happens to be of color, there must be something wrong with you, that you should be out murdering, raping, pillaging. What the hell has happened to our society? And
I promise you, I'm going to address that question in a minute. Let's get James and the rest of the guys in here on this abortion subject. James, did you have an opinion?
I'm just flabbergasted by the last statement.
Well, James, when did you stop becoming?
But I forgot what I wanted to say about the whole abortion thing. Because
this is heard only on Reese on the radio, where you get the real story. You got to listen to the show.
I can't wrap my head around the whole last statement. I really can not. Niggerization of.
He's using Torre's word.
I'm speechless. It's just.
James, do you need a minute?
Yeah, I think he does.
Yeah, I need a minute.
Take a minute. Take a minute. Let it soak in. Let's go to Edward, and then we'll go to Mike.
No, I think, again, I think that this particular ad is a very, very telling ad.
I didn't say let's go to Reese. I said let's go to Edward, and then let's go to Mike.
I was asking Edward a question.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Edward, do you think that it's a compelling ad?
Definitely. Yeah, I think this just shows the continuing Democrats' war on children. I think that's what we should call it.
Wow, that's actually very. I like that idea.
I like that title, Edward.
Yeah, I think that's it. It is a war on children.
Democrats war on children.
And let me ask something. You know, you described that abortion where the child survives, but Obama, voted to kill the child anyway, even if it survived out of the womb.
Yeah.
Is there a time limit on that? Can a woman who has a 2-year-old then kill a 2-year-old and say, hey, it's a late-term abortion?
That's exactly my point. If it's okay to kill a child, okay, in the womb or outside of the womb, they're saying that there must be some time period in order for the baby to die. So here's my question, I don't think that as many people in the country should have been all that upset about Kaylee Anthony's death. How about that? A mother was a piece of garbage anyway, and all she was doing was aborting her 2-year-old.
Exactly.
I mean, can you put it any other way? You know, I need to go out and party. I didn't want this kid in the first place. Here, choke on this tape, get your ass out in the woods, and call it a night. Mommy needs to go out and shake her ass for a couple of bucks.
Shake your ass? What?
I mean, come on. I mean, really, what are we so upset about Kaylee Anthony for? If it's okay to just ignore the fact that after a child is born, from a botched abortion, you can kill it.
I have by the end of my first term in office.
Say that again?
Sorry, I had issues with my computer. Well, yeah, it's a compelling ad, but I don't know who it's aimed at. That's the problem. Yeah, it looks like the Republicans or whoever this Susan B. Anthony group is trying to go right at the Democrats and say, well, Democrats want to kill babies. But this issue is more complicated than that. You know, that I'm not a fan. I know some people in the GOP are absolutely 100% against abortion no matter what.
Right.
And there are some out there that are no late-term abortion no matter what. But government has no business getting involved in medical treatment. There are cases where a late-term abortion is necessary. And the anti-abortion people have got these few doctors that do these things so terrified with threats of terrorism that they quit doing it. There's only like two or three in the country that will do a late-term abortion now.
Well,
and there's some
cases
where it's necessary.
Let's consider that, okay? I understand where you're coming from. You're saying that, right, government should not – what you do with your body, you know, is just as I consider sacrilege to being – the government being in someone's bedroom. I agree.
Well, no, it's not it. It's the government has no business telling doctors how to do their jobs.
Okay, fair enough. I'm just saying – I'm just talking about when it comes to the human body, I get it. Government should not be involved in that. Everybody knows that abortion is really—it's sort of a moral deal. It's a moral issue about whether or not you should kill a child, or whether or not that's murder, or whatever the case is.
Well, if that's the case, then you can't say that they should illegalize abortion.
There you go.
Well, here's what the greatest line I ever heard, as far as a joke is concerned, right? Is that liberals believe that you can kill a baby. You can kill a baby in the womb, but yet believe that the Constitution is a living and breathing document.
Well, you know, I'm on, and granted, this is on Mother Jones. I found this article on late-term abortion with
right.
a doctor named Dr. William Rashbaum. He does late-term abortions. He's got a woman in his office who is going to abort her 18-week-old fetus that
wow.
has no brain. It got big enough, they found out the baby had no brain. So there are people out there that would force that woman to gestate this baby that has no brain, that's never going to have a life, and may die within a few days of being born. But because they want to interject their personal opinions in what doctors do, they're going to put that woman through a double nightmare. Because not only is she going to lose her baby, but she's got to carry it for 9 months knowing it's got no brain.
Okay, I understand. See, that's a tough one for me. But I'm going to let James go first because I have an answer for that. Go ahead, James.
Okay. Thank you for bringing me back on track. Who was that, Dennis?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing me back on track, Dennis. And also, I'd like to also thank you for giving another perspective here.
Oh, that's Mike. Mike's given a different perspective, by the way.
Oh, that was Mike. Excuse me. Sorry. Well, I'd like to thank you. Wow, me and Mike are actually been in accord for a couple of times lately. It's really, really – but anyways, getting back to the statement I wanted to make. With the – what was it called? Post gestation,
right?
Or post thing. The fact of the matter is, I look at it as if, say, you have like a DNR. Do you know what that is?
Do not resuscitate.
Do not resuscitate. It's along the same lines, or I would think it follows along the same law. Now, everyone wants to say that they're killing babies. All right, they want to use that term because it generates a shock factor. However, if you look at it in terms of a DNR, like if a person is dying and a doctor who's spent his years trying to save people's lives tries to save that person anyway, then you go against that person's wishes.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there. Hold on. Now, first of all, the doctor would never, ever go up against a do not resuscitate. So hear me, I'm going to say it. A doctor would tell you first, I can save him or I cannot save him in order for you to get, in order for that reaction to be, okay, so the do not resuscitate. In other words, if he says, look, I'm in a coma, if my card says to Mary, do not resuscitate, right? If I go into a coma, whatever it is, and the doctor mm-hmm. tells Mary, I think I can save him. I think I can bring him back. You think Mary's going to argue? Yeah, but he says do not resuscitate. So we have to kill him because of what he says.
Now,
we have to give
see,
him one
of the
apples.
You can't say that. You can't say that.
Of course.
Well, let me stop you there because you can't say that. You're dealing with a person who's grieving. You're dealing with a person who doesn't want to let go of the person they care about the most. All right? So that decision cannot be made in a
vacuum?
Yeah. I mean, come on. You're dealing with a person in grief.
Okay,
right?
Wait a minute. James, let me just jump in here real quick because my stepfather was actually, a year and a half ago, was put into the hospital behind some massive seizures. We thought that he was having a stroke. Turns out that it was massive seizures. It put him out basically into a coma for almost 2 weeks. We thought he was going to die. He did have a DNR. He told my mother he did not, under any circumstances, want to be resuscitated if he was going to have to live like a vegetable. However, if there was something wrong with him and the doctors could bring him back,
right,
to a state where he was not a vegetable or did not need artificial. If he wasn't living on artificial life, like a breathing tube or whatever, a ventilator.
Okay.
He didn't want to live on a ventilator. So,
okay.
You know, there were a few times when we thought maybe we were going to have to tell them to pull the plug. But luckily, he ended up coming out of that coma, and he, you know, now he lives in a nursing home, and he doesn't know today from tomorrow.
That's true.
You know, he thinks his mother is still living. She's been dead for probably over 30 years. He still knows who we are, but he just can't get he just can't get the dates right. He can't do any of that. So thank God.
Yeah, I mean that's my point. I mean,
Wait a minute.
I would rather. No,
I would rather. But again, see, I think you just proved my point.
No,
all right?
I would rather have.
You can't even remember who you are.
No.
Okay?
He doesn't remember who we are. He remembers who we are, but he doesn't know what day and what year we are in. Sometimes
all
he
right. doesn't know what day and what year we're in. Okay.
Still alive.
All right.
But he's still alive. And I'm pretty sure that if he even knew that he was in that state, he'd be happy to be alive than dead.
Has anybody bothered to ask him? Or is everyone else so happy that they have him still in their lives that nobody's even bothered to ask?
Well, we
go visit him. We go visit him every week. My mother goes to visit him. We take him candy. We take him out to – he still smokes. We take him out to smoke cigarettes.
Bill knows how to smoke.
He doesn't. He doesn't smoke when we're not there because nobody's there to take him out. But we check on him, call, we do all that stuff. So it's not like he's a burden on us because he's not. I'm glad he's still alive.
But I want to approach what Mike said about the baby that was born with the baby that didn't have a brain.
Yeah, can we get back to that? Because there was a comment I wanted to make.
That's point that I want to make. And, Mike, to answer that, this is a very, very valid point. I mean, no, I'm not a woman, so it's difficult for me to even embark on this conversation from that perspective. But that being said, the fact that you are carrying a child without a brain that is probably not going to survive for a day outside of the womb, maybe even a moment outside of the womb, the idea is, as far as I'm concerned morally, is whether or not I'm going to decide to kill the child versus the child dying of natural causes. That's the only argument that I have here.
However, you still put the mother through...
Hold on. James, let me hear from Mike real quick. Do you understand what I'm saying to Mike? I say, because to me, there is a level of responsibility in action on a case like this.
To who?
Here's another case. There's a woman who had an abortion from Dr. Tiller, who was the abortion doctor that nut job shot in church and murdered, the anti-abortionist.
This is the guy they were calling Tiller the killer or Tiller the baby killer?
Says here that in 1994, this guy and his wife found out they were pregnant, had a difficult pregnancy. Sometime in the eighth month, they took another sonogram, and they found out that she was going to have conjoined twins. The guy says conjoined twins was not so difficult, but the way they were joined meant that at best only one child would survive the surgery to separate them, and the survivor would live a life filled with surgery and organ transplant. So they had a late-term abortion. If the government has its way, or if these anti-abortionists have their way, they make absolutes to regard medicine, and medicine is not an absolute. Medicine is case by case. There are some procedures you can ban. Okay, if you want to have a law that says no female circumcision, fine, that's okay. If nobody really needs a female circumcision. But there are going to be cases, because human beings are infinite and there are all sorts of possibilities, where every other medical procedure is going to be necessary. There may be cases where you need to do this. And if the Republicans are going to make this the cornerstone of their platform, they're going to lose a lot of voters. They're not going to bring anybody over by making this the cornerstone of their platform.
Well, you're right about that. I don't believe that they're making
rigid mindset.
I don't believe that they're trying to make that the cornerstone of their platform. There are some strong
obviously they are.
No. There are some strong arguments. I do believe that Mitt Romney is trying very, very hard to change that platform, because Romney believes, you know, not to go into politics, but Romney believes that in cases of life of the mother, rape and incest, abortion should be applied. But the argument is always going to be, if there are cases like the ones that you cite that are prominent, then yes, I believe that that probably has to be considered.
Okay, this is where I got to stop you. This is where I got to stop you, because this is where, you know, the terminology that comes up a lot and you just used, all right? What did you just say? What was the term you just used?
I'm trying to figure out which one you're talking about.
The last statement, if it's proper or if it's this, who gets to decide that? All right.
Well, I think it should be decided between the physician and the patient.
Physician and the patient. But as Mike is saying, it's the government who's saying, is coming in and saying that, no, the decision between the physician and the patient no longer matters. It never does.
If all extremes have been exhausted, okay, if all extremes have been exhausted, then I believe that it's a matter of law. Now, and I'm going to harken back to another case. Remember Terry Schiavo? You guys remember that case in Florida, Mike? I know you remember that case.
I don't know why the government got involved in that guy's decision between him and his wife.
That's exactly, and the reason why was because as what's normally the case here, this is why I find it disheartening for me personally. In the Terry Schiavo case, here was a husband who was making the decision that he should take his wife off life support, but the government got so involved that her parents could then take the roles of her guardians in some sort of way,
yeah.
if you get my meaning, and then supersede his authority as her husband. And that's
But why did the government get involved? Who was behind that?
Who made that decision?
That's the Republicans kowtowing to the Bible thumpers.
Well, the Bible thumpers to keep her alive?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was life, period. It was life, period.
Yes,
as long as she was breathing,
even
if it was machines, as long as she was breathing, she was alive. And
well, I don't believe
for her to
I
stay alive.
I don't
it was the same
the
people, man. It was the evangelicals putting political pressure on the Republicans. And
well,
the Republicans, for their failure to tell these people to piss off, are going to lose themselves a huge portion of the voting base.
Well, you know what? Although that might be the case in Terry Schiavo, again, my biggest problem with that was that the husband had no rights. And I believe that, to me personally, I think that's the government's involvement in emasculating men. And here was a man who says, look, I want my wife to die. I want her to die peacefully. And they were saying that the man had no right. I think that was the real big pressure here. Was that?
Yeah, and you know what? There's also pressure. But it wasn't even just the government.
James, before you go into – wait a minute. Before you say something, I want you to hear this. This is the reason why I'm saying this, okay? This is why I'm trying to explain to you why I have the biggest problem with this is because – the father in this has no rights. There are plenty of fathers out there who would rather not abort the child, but have completely been thrown out of the mix in this argument.
However, in the case of Schiavo, all right, and as you said, the parents jumped on board, the mother and the father. So, and it just leads me to say that you cannot have it both ways. All right? Because you can't say that the mother has all the rights and the father doesn't. You can't say that the husband has no rights,
But the parents did. I mean, they cut
right.
that umbilical
cord. It was the parents. It was the parents who jumped behind this and led their support because they wanted to save their child. Again, that was the parents. Two of them, mother, father. So
again,
it's not just against men.
Well, my point was that at what point did the parents cut the umbilical cord when it comes to Terry Schiavo? She's no longer their baby. She is now an adult. And she's
now an adult, and yet, how was it played up? Once the government tried to get involved, what they did was play up the one mitigating factor that, you know, would tug at the heartstrings of everyone, the parents.
Well, no, I agree with you there. I agree with you there wholeheartedly. But the bottom line is, as Mike suggested, with a baby being born with no brain, that therefore you should abort the child, my biggest problem with that is that if she knows that the baby is going to die outside of the womb, you allow nature to take its course.
You allow nature to take its course, but
yes.
You are still putting that mother through an interminable ordeal.
So,
this is a woman who has a, and I can only guess at, a life, or not even a life.
Guys,
just
am I sounding crazy here?
Growing inside of her, she gets more and more attached to something or someone, or however you want to put it, all right, that's going to die anyway.
Yeah,
you're putting the mother through
like time bomb in her womb.
In the medical community, it's first do no harm. But you're doing harm to the mother. You're doing harm to the father. You're doing harm to every other family member who's invested in this child that is going to die in a day.
All right, Edward, did you have something you wanted to add?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
You can't look at things in absolutes. That's the problem.
Okay.
The government needs to understand that medicine is not an absolute. You've got too many non-doctors who are making that decision. It's not something a lawyer can decide or a politician or a preacher. that, the medical issue. There are medical reasons for everything.
I think this is a call. This is a 901 error code. Who's on the line with us at Reese on the radio? Hello? Okay, I guess they hung up. Anyway, nonetheless.
Reese. The question is, if the baby is going to be very healthy and coming to term and lead a very healthy, productive life, but the child happens to be the product of a rape, who are we to give the rapist a 20-year sentence, but the baby the death sentence?
You know what? I'm going to let one of the guys respond to that, because you know what? I'm going to let one of you guys respond to this, because I'm going to say this, because James and I know this woman who did this. We know a woman, I should say, that we know, that we grew up with, and she lived on James' block when we were kids, named Betsy. She has a son named Jason, who is the product of a rape. And she gave birth to him. He was one of my favorite little guys back in the days. In fact, when he was probably at 2-3 years old, he would go nuts whenever I left the house. And Betsy would always scream to me, "Reese, what are you doing, my son? He always gets mad when you leave." And I love this kid. He was one of the best kids in the world. And I remember when she told me this story, that he was a product of a rape. A guy was driving down the street, you know, kidnapped her, got her pregnant, and she kept him. And
that's great for her. But what's right for her may not be right for every woman. And to tell some woman that she's going to have to spend nine months reliving the worst experience of her life
guys, hold on. How is she reliving that through the child?
Because every time she looks at the child, she's going to remind her of the rape.
There.
How is she not going to relive that?
Wait. Hold on. So the child is no longer innocent in this, guys? The child is now...
No. Stop blaming the child. The fact of the matter is, you're taking the mother out of the picture. Now,
I didn't do that.
Yeah,
okay,
Betsy, you had the best case scenario. However, all right, Betsy was a strong woman, all right, and we both know that.
She was.
She was a strong woman who decided that she wasn't going to let this horrific experience color that. But how many women would? How many women do?
I know girls who've been raped, and they're ruined. And they didn't even have to carry the baby. Can you imagine every day you look at this kid and you're reminded of the guy who violently raped you? Or you have to go through 9 months
after the baby? And
let alone
if the child looks like the father.
Yeah.
No. See, I knew you were going to go there, James. That's the reason why I pointed this out. This is the reason why I have issue with this, okay? The reason why I have issue with this and why I commend Betsy for her decision to do that is because Betsy did not look at Jason as a product of a rape. She looked at him as a child that was innocent, in the entire ordeal, and that grew inside her, that was a part of her instead of just a part of a rape. Now, I'm not
And that's fine.
But again,
but
wait, hold on, Mike, please let me make this point before you go on, okay? Think about it, Reese. It was Betsy's choice to do so. No one forced her, and she just decided, well, I'm going to love my child anyway.
Yeah,
she made the choice before anything.
Yeah, she should have the right to make the choice as to what
but
she's
there's a different point in
body.
All this.
Go ahead, Dennis. What's the different
point? The
point
is, in today's society, and that's why I said the niggerization of America, and I meant that.
Yeah.
And I meant that sincerely, that what used to be normal when we were growing up is now the abnormal. The government, the society is forcing you to have a throwaway society, to consider blacks as subnormal people needing welfare and every government invention that you can't
you need
make
to turn
on your own.
You're
the role model,
Reese.
Dude,
I have to
disagree, because this is not a new thing. I mean, where I grew up in the Deep South, if some woman, some white woman had, say, been raped by a black guy, she got an abortion. She wasn't forced to bring that child to term. So there's always been acceptance for abortion. We don't live in a throwaway society.
Oh, no. I can't agree with that. I mean, if it wasn't even abortion, what happened was that it was more of the female was sent to live with their cousins somewhere else.
Right.
And then,
right.
So the child was given up for adoption, but it
when
was
I
hidden.
When I say a throwaway
period.
Society, on the ballot in Massachusetts this year is going to be a euthanasia for all people. If all you need is two signatures and another impartial body, maybe of a doctor who you can get anywhere, and then your life is terminated. And I'm talking
right,
about at any age.
I'm gonna get in on you here. Have you ever lost anybody to a terminal disease, Dennis?
Yeah.
I lost my father to Parkinson's disease. Can I tell you my father's last 2 weeks? My father spent the last 2 weeks of his life laying in a hospital bed under hospice care in the living room, starving to death. He was a perfect case for some doctor to come in and give him a massive overdose of morphine. You would have had to sit there for 2 weeks and watch this man waste away so he looked like an Auschwitz victim. So, yes, there are reasons for euthanasia. It's not a political
issue. Never is
a
reason for euthanasia. I'm
a
Catholic.
It's a medical issue.
Yeah, okay.
It's a medical issue.
Mike,
I respect deeply what you're saying, sir.
It's not about law anymore. It's about religion. He just said he was a Catholic.
For a lot of it, yes. And you got to make a stand. I mean, when I'm talking about euthanasia, and I can understand what happened to
you
and your father with Parkinson's disease, but we're talking about people for any reason at all in the new Massachusetts statute will be able to off yourself. The throwaway society.
People own their bodies. Nobody's going to.
People own their bodies. Thank you.
Semantics.
You don't
Nobody
own your body.
Go to the doctor and say, you know, I'm depressed, please kill me. That's not the issue. But if someone
it is
has
the
a
issue.
Terminal disease, someone
Actually,
has Lou Gehrig's disease, or Parkinson's, or Alzheimer's, or terminal
well, wait,
cancer,
wait, 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 hold on. Now, Mike,
own
I'm going
to body enough
guys,
to hold a switch.
Guys, wait, 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 wait. Guys, Jay, give me a second here. Mike, I'm going to cite contradiction here. Because if it is indeed true that we own our bodies, then I'll ask you this one, and I think it's a fair question. Then a child in the womb, when does he have the right to, or she for that matter, have the right to control their bodies? Is it only a person who controls their body once they're a certain age? Is there a lifespan before you own your body? I mean, that's a strong question. If you want to use the argument that we own our bodies, then the child who is defenseless, when does he or she own her body? Which I think is a strong argument to make.
Well,
if we own our bodies,
own body?
Why can't we have legal heroin?
What?
Well,
why
can't
even
think of it. Logically, you should have legalized drugs if we own our own body.
You can in some countries. You know, you can in Mexico. Everything's legal
well,
in
Greece
Mexico.
On the radio isn't on Mexico as far as I know. We're in the States.
All drugs are legal in Mexico. Drugs are legal in Portugal. So, yeah, there are places in the world where people do own their bodies.
Well, Mike, is that not a valid question? When does the fetus own its body? Isn't that a valid question?
When does the mother stop owning
her
body?
I can answer that question.
Okay, James, go ahead and answer it. Try if you will.
I can answer that question. The fetus owns its body when it can take care of itself.
Whoa.
No, better yet, no. The fetus
but if he's
owns
a Democrat, he'll never
the,
take care of himself.
When the mother quits owning its body. When the mother quits owning her body, the fetus owns its body.
Okay, so when the mother controls the fetus's body until the day it no longer needs the human body or the mother's body for that matter, then it owns its own body.
Yes.
This is,
otherwise,
this is some,
think
this
about
is
what you just said. Obviously, you can't own your own body if you can't exist on your own.
Yeah, there are people out there that would tell you, gee, you know, I'm sorry you have Lou Gehrig's disease, man, and I'm sorry it's miserable, and every day you have to watch your body fail you more and more, and you're going to end up not being able to talk or walk or take care of yourself, but no, we can't have somebody take care of you and give you some heroin or some opium and kill you because God. God forbid, you know, and then these are the same people, these are the same people, the same type of people who would say that there's a drain, you know, people are drained on the economy or on taxpayers. Well, who's paying for all that? I think if the family and the doctor get together and they say, look, you know, your father's going to die a horrible, painful, starving to death in the living room, Mike, so we can give him a mouthful of morphine and kill him, let him go. Save everybody the torture of watching my father starve to death in the living room. Right.
Well,
and I also wanted to make the point because I keep getting off the topic. Everyone talks about, like, the best-case scenario. Like Mary says, you know, and the lady who was on the writer, all right, that's the best-case scenario. However, it's not like this is a utopia where anyone who does survive is going to live a good life. This is what other people expect or believe, but no one actually knows. You don't know what's going to happen with that child at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know. I appreciate all aspects of this, but I think that they're just, it will be an argument that will last for hundreds of years. I mean,
it'll last forever because
it'll last as long as human beings exist.
Yeah,
that's why it's not a legal issue.
The reason
so what can we all agree on?
We all have our own stories. We all have our own stories. We all have our own, our own personal beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, Mike, you feel really strongly about it because of what you watched your father go through.
Well, here's the thing, though, Mary. Somebody who chooses euthanasia, somebody who has their reasons for that, that doesn't affect somebody who doesn't like euthanasia. So mind your own goddamn business.
No, and Mike, I'm not saying that I disagree with you. I'm just saying that, you know, you may feel a little bit more strongly about this because of your own personal experiences. We all have our own personal experiences.
That's strongly because of yours. And until you've gone through it, it's not something you understand until you've gone through it.
Exactly.
I've gone
through it. People who haven't gone through it have no problem interjecting themselves. Look at the dichotomy, Mike. Look at the dichotomy between you and Mary. This is a perfect example. All right? Mary just came up with a heart-wrenching, heart-tugging, but our situation is different. However, you have something that's on the other side of the coin.
Well, yeah, but our situation is totally different. My dad wasn't walking around smoking and functioning, even on a limited basis.
She didn't know that at the time.
Hold on for a second, guys. Let me say this. Mike, let me say something real quick.
Now, there's been times where I have gone to see my stepfather at the nursing home, and I pray, and I would pray.
Well, yeah, I understand. I mean, look, my old man asked me to kill him.
You know what, Mike? I have family members that have had people die. And ask them to kill them because they were in misery.
Yeah, see? So you have to go through this misery or put the family through it.
I would pray for some doctor to help you out. If my stepfather couldn't live a decent life and he had to live in a state where he had no idea where he was, if the quality of his life was going to be so destroyed that, mm-hmm. you know, and at first he couldn't walk, he couldn't do anything until he went to rehabilitation.
Yeah. Do you have a cat? Do you have a pet?
No, I don't.
Well, what would you do if your dog?
Have you ever had a pet?
Couldn't walk.
We actually just recently put my mother and my stepfather's cat down because the cat was dying. And I had to make the executive decision to tell my mother, you know what, we can't afford the care for the cat. We just put my stepfather in a nursing home, and then cat gets sick and is, you know, is like can't breathe. So we had to take the cat to the veteran to the vet hospital and have them put it down.
And you did it why? Because it was humane, right?
It was. In my eyes, it was humane.
Yeah. So
it's
inhumane to let a cat
non-human.
Suffer. Yeah.
I'm sorry,
but
Mary. You know I love you. But
animals,
I mean, the thing is, an animal has more of a right to die with either dignity or, you know, with less pain than a human does.
Yeah, and that's what gets me. Yeah, I know people with Lou Gehrig's disease, man, and that's
I mean,
a horrible disease.
I mean, just look at the term humane. It's humane to kill an animal, but it's evil to let a person die.
Yeah, to let
Come
them
on.
Make the final decision for their life.
And
because
again,
somebody,
who made the
somebody,
final decision? It wasn't the cat.
Well, and it comes down to religion, which is
wasn't
crazy.
The cat, it was you.
Yeah, you know, people's religions should not impose on other people's beliefs.
Well,
exactly.
I appreciate exactly where it is that you're coming from in that regard. I think that what we're talking about, in essence, life is an individual sport, sadly. And we all look at things as a perspective. I understand where everybody's coming from, is that we cannot look at this in a broad spectrum. We can't look at life with broad strokes. We can't. Every
right.
individual has a certain way that they should be able to live or die, for that matter, and how it is that we choose to live our lives. It cannot be something that's decided by government. And I agree with that.
Well, no, and to come at it from a libertarian standpoint, if it doesn't directly affect you, mind your business.
It's none of your business. Right.
And how? And think about it conversely, because even from a libertarian point of view, if you allow that person to live, or the child, all right, let's go back to the original impetus here. If you allow that child to live, the parent didn't want it in the first place. You're not going to force that parent to keep it. What's going to happen? It's going to directly affect us because us as taxpayers are now raising that child for the mother who didn't want it.
Well, you know what? In that regard, I will say that we got to, you know, I can't live with the idea of people just getting pregnant willy-nilly and then getting an abortion whenever they feel like it, just for the sake of getting an abortion. That part I cannot deal with, and I
well,
can't
yeah,
stand for it.
Nobody likes
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I agree. There should be a tighter control, but the choice, take it out of the picture, no,
yeah,
never.
Because and by people who have nothing to do with the situation. You know, if I saw all these anti-abortion loudmouths with 10 adopted children in their homes, I might give their point to credibility. But they don't walk the walk. They're not helping out.
Yeah, and people who are not even in the situation telling people who are in worse situations what to do.
All right. I get
to kick it back to Michael Shiloh real quick. That poor guy's life was hell. He couldn't move on with his life because she was still alive. He dealt with her for, what, a decade or more? Did everything he could to try to make her better. And in the end, the damn Republicans here in Florida demonized this child as a wannabe wife murderer?
That's not true.
It is true.
No, it's not.
He couldn't get on with his life.
Because the family was willing to take care of her, and he couldn't wait to ditch her and go on with his girlfriend.
The thing is, if
when
the family
is married, the family is not
in
control.
Could the family do that? Could the family do that?
People are breaking up.
No, say that again. I didn't hear that last point you made. What was the last point you made, Mike, with made
Dennis? It's not the family's business. Once you're married, the husband has control, not the mother and father.
What was this control? Where did we get to American stage that we're doing control? This is a brave
the
new
husband,
world.
The husband
right
has the power of attorney over her once she became unable to make her own decisions.
Right, exactly. Once she's unable to make her own decisions, the husband is responsible for her life. That always should have been the case. That's what I was pointing out about the Terry Schiavo case. It should have never, ever been challenged by her parents. It should have never been allowed to be challenged by her parents.
because that relationship, as far as the umbilical cord is concerned, is over. Sure,
and the government should have stayed out of it.
And the thing is, the only reason it went that far is because the parents couldn't let go.
Yeah, but the parents were manipulated by forces outside that family.
You think that's not true either?
No, I don't think so. The thing is, well, all right, I'll agree with that. I'll agree with that. But you know what? The reason they allowed themselves to be manipulated is because they were still holding on to the hope that miracle of miracles, she was going to wake up, she was going to live a full life, she was going to get up and walk and be the daughter that they knew.
Even though she had no brain.
Yeah, exactly. They were holding on to a hope that didn't exist. You're absolutely right about that, James. You're right about that. I think that really, really influenced them even more than the cackles of bureaucrats.
The hope did not exist. However, being parents, they couldn't stop being parents.
Right. Now, I'm not blaming them. I'm not blaming them, Dennis. I'm not blaming them. That's not something I'm willing to understand.
But yeah.
But
Harry
Schiavo's
husband had more than the interests of his wife also at hand, you know.
What?
But
because he had gone.
I don't think we're ever going to agree on this because this becomes emotional.
I would rather us never agree upon it because it's still an exchange of ideas. That's the whole idea, and I like that.
Yeah, if everybody agreed, this show would be boring.
You're right.
For shizzle.
That. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Totally,
Dennis,
dude.
Dennis in Boston, James in Virginia. Of course, our president. Mike, we got to do our thing tomorrow. I got your intro and everything.
All right.
We're going to do it tomorrow at 9:30. Be ready for it. I got you an intro and everything. Thank you, guys, as always. And Edward in Connecticut, as always, you need to talk more. We'll see you guys tomorrow in 3 Sun Radio each weeknight at 8 p.m.